You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason. You can probably just skip this episode. It isn't a very good one. They're going to stumble through a dumb topic, then one will pitch a weak game idea. Have you tried the Dice Tower?
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, May 11th, 2015. You're listening to episode 154. My name is Rob, drinking a beer there at the table is Jason.
Hey,
we've drinking. Also got, oh, sorry, what are you?
Oh, sorry, no, go ahead.
I was saying we also have a special guest hanging out with us here tonight. Do you have something to say?
Speak.
Yeah,
there he is. Quimby the dog.
Quimby.
My wife took the kids on a walk and the dog didn't want to stop barking since they left. So, yeah, so he's down here with us. All right, now go lay down, dude. Go lay down. Good job.
So, builders, if you hear any more random barks here or there, just...
Sorry about that.
Quimby has an opinion on whatever we're discussing at that time. So he's all right.
Yeah.
He just keeps wanting to give me kisses.
Well, if you talk to him, that's mistake number one. Right. See? And then he's like, oh, you want to talk to me?
See, I have cats.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, you want to talk to me? Check you later.
Yeah,
and they walk away.
Yeah.
They give you the butt.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm drinking some Ghetto Blaster, the beer you can hear.
I can't hear it.
Nope.
Did it make a loud sound when you opened it?
Nope.
I was here.
It'd be sweet if it did, though.
Yeah, if it went like, bam!
I think it'd be sweet if it played...
It was like a sick drop.
Low rider when you opened it. Like...
You're right. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that.
So...
I'm drinking a Red Bull.
Yeah.
So it's a little different
from
the
exciting,
Ghetto
Blaster. We got a long night coming up tonight. We're doing some extra late recording tonight for the episode you heard last week.
Last week's, right. Scheduling being what it is.
And then
in
between times, we're doing a bonus episode, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Which you may have heard last week.
Hopefully. If I wasn't too lazy, you heard that last week.
If not, hey, guess what? This week.
Yeah.
Because Rob's hearing this as he's editing. I guess I'll have to do that now.
Oh, well.
So, yeah. Good times.
So what's new, man?
I've been playing this game recently that
what
was kind of fun.
What game you've been playing?
It's an iOS game, but it's a card game. It is a straight up card game. Could be played with a deck of like 54 cards in the deck. It's called Card Crawl.
Card Crawl.
And I found out about it because Bruno Cathala on Twitter actually posted his score.
Oh,
I've beat that score more than once. But sorry, Bruno, what's up? But no, anyways, I saw it and I was like, what's this card crawl game? And it's like the dungeon crawl game that's a card game. And so the game works like this. You if you play constructed, which I do because I like to not have randomization, you get to pick five cards and they're like special power cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them in a deck of 51 other cards. No, oh my gosh, math is so hard. 49 other cards.
49 cards, okay.
So that makes 54. You shuffle them all up. And most of the cards are either monsters, swords, shields, potions, or coin. And every turn, four cards are dealt out in front of you. You have two hand slots, and you have a backpack that you can put one item in. And you have 13 hit points when you start the game. And when a card so four cards are dealt out, you have to deal with three of those cards, and then three more cards are dealt out.
Mm.
So there's always four cards when a new round starts.
Okay.
And the whole point of the game is to empty the deck, still being alive, and make as much money as you can. So money is the coin cards, but you can also sell cards. You can sell your swords, you can sell your shields, you can sell your potions. And you can also, you can discard your specialty cards, but you don't get any money for those. So the idea is the better specialty cards you have and the better you are at playing the game, the more money you can make, because the more of your higher level potions you can sell off. And if a potion heals you for 10, that means it's worth 10 gold. So, like, my high score is, like, 90, I think, gold, which is pretty darn good. I'm pretty happy with that. I'm sure people are blowing that out of the water, but I feel pretty good about that because my first scores were, like, 50.
No, okay.
So, I've grown a bit. But it's fun. It's got some replayability. I play it every once in a while, every couple of days. I'll play three or four games, and then I stop playing it again. But it's fun, and it's got a lot of unlockables. So, the longer you play, you earn money.
Mm.
That money you earn at the end of the game, you keep. And then you can spend that money to unlock new cool cards.
Okay.
and you can only ever have five, but you know, you can mix and match them, and there's some good combos, I think.
Gotcha.
So yeah, so I'm having a good time with that, and it's, I like it because, I mean, it is legit, it's a card game, right? Yeah. Speaking of that, card games on iOS, I know a lot of people are super happy because you can now play Hearthstone on the iPhone.
I heard that.
I haven't started to play it because I still have so many reasons to hate that game, but but yeah, you can. And I was tempted, and then I remembered how much I hated the game, and then I decided not to.
Yeah, I didn't even try it.
So, yeah. Did you ever play it or no?
No. No, well, because I never had an iPad.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I don't know. Just CCGs it, like that are just not my thing.
It has some clever mechanics to it.
That's what I've heard.
But it also has some stuff that's really stupid.
Some randomness that can really hurt in frustrating ways.
And some things that really benefit players who have played for a long time and or have spent a lot of money. But Scott King, if you're listening to this, screw you, because I don't care about your opinion. So just want you to know that. I just pick on Scott because he plays, and he's made fun of me for griping about the broken cards in the game, which I know he plays because I see him post pictures of it all the time on Twitter. So,
oh, okay.
So suck it, Scott King. Go take a picture.
Yeah.
Draw a book.
Man.
Publish something else.
Ouch.
Make a calendar. Do one of the other thousand things you do.
Yeah.
It's not Hearthstone.
Yeah. Wow.
Anyways.
Some rage.
Sorry, dude.
There.
I felt like that was unfair rage, but, well.
There was.
You mess with the bull, you get the horns.
It's recorded.
Even though you didn't
now.
Actually mess the bull.
I'm not cutting this out, so.
No, that's fine. Scott can take it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Man.
So, anyways, yeah, good times.
Yeah.
Also, Andy Lennox, don't email me and tell me that I'm wrong about this. I don't care.
Yeah.
Andy also loves that game.
Does he? Okay, all right.
Matt Loomis, you're good at the game. Everybody knows it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. So anyways, you brought this thing sitting there.
Yeah. So
I feel like it's the elephant in the room.
It is. It's
the elephant in the room.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
I don't even know what it is.
Well, you can see the box.
It says runes.
Honestly,
on it.
I don't really know what it is either. Cause I've never opened the box.
Is it a game?
Let me do this to set it up here. So, I just noticed something funny on the bottom also. Anyway, so last summer, longtime builders might recall that my wife and I took a trip to Scotland and England last summer.
You'll remember that as the best two shows we've ever had.
Yeah.
Because Rob wasn't on.
Mm-hmm. And worst edited.
You're not wrong.
we went over there for a vacation, and it was a super good time. As you do when you go to tourist traps, you go in the gift shop, right? I mean, everyone does that, I think. And in one of the gift shops...
I love the gift shop.
In one of the gift shops... And man, it's killing me because I can't remember which gift shop it was in. I want to say maybe it was in Bath. Because I feel like this is the same... I bought this from the same gift shop where my wife bought actual Roman bath water from Bath.
How'd you get that home?
In a suitcase.
Oh, because you had to put it in the suitcase. What did she do with it? Is it just in a bottle?
It's just sitting on a shelf.
Did she like bathe in it?
It's not meant to be used. It's a souvenir. It's in a sealed bottle.
It's a creepy souvenir.
It's funny. It's cute.
Somebody could have peed in that water.
You're right. We're not going to drink it.
I would not advise that.
It's going to stay in a bottle for the rest of our lives, I'm sure.
Good plan.
But it was £5.99. Okay. That's what the price tag on it here. And it's runes. Uncover the secrets of the stones. And on the back, it says $9.95 in USA, $10.95 in Canada, $5.99 in UK. Your future awaits. Gain ancient wisdom with runes and take a peek into your future. Included are a set of 24 runes, a cloth to do your runes casting on, and an 88-page book. And then I just noticed on the bottom, it says... it's made by Running Press, Philadelphia, PA.
You bought your authentic rune set.
Yeah.
Was made in Philadelphia.
I bought it in Bath, England.
It's funny that it wasn't like, because if it was made in China, you'd be like, well, it's made in China.
Well, of course
China.
It is, but no.
It was made in USA.
Philadelphia, PA. Anyway, so we've been kind of reorganizing, cleaning up the house, and I found this in a pile that I forgot that I had, and I've never even opened it, so I thought maybe I would pull it open here, and we could
try to predict the future of the show.
Cast some runes.
I predict that a lot of people are going to listen to our show.
The first thing that I see is a rule book that's really thick.
Like, dude, that rule book is really thick. That's like half the thickness of the box is that rule book. That's not true. It's probably a quarter, but still.
It's a solid, you know...
It said it's 88 pages, right? Or 80 pages?
I don't know. It's... don't fall asleep on me. You're yawning. Yeah. It's smaller. It's a little bit smaller than a standard size poker card, but it's probably, you know, a little over half an inch thick. So that's cool. And there is a cloth to do our rune casting on. High quality cloth, piece of cloth here. And then there's a Ziploc baggie with some plastic half spheres with runes. Boy, this is cheap. I thought it was like real stone.
You got screwed.
All right, so
here's the future you didn't see coming.
I'm going to say rules be darned. I'm just going to cast some runes here. What do you say?
It's I don't know, man.
Most of them are face down. Is that bad?
I think that's the point. I think the face up ones are what tell you your future.
Is that it?
Let me see them. Let me see them here. I'm sure that I can interpret it for you.
Think so? Without me reading the book?
Yeah. Okay, so let me pull out the ones here that are... So, you have some stuff here.
We should take a picture of this for the show notes.
Okay.
So people can...
You should make sure to remind me. So anyways, yeah, so I took a picture. So there are some symbols here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what they are. Here's the thing. I actually don't really care either. Yeah, this is stupid. I'm done doing this.
Yeah, this is a total bust.
Yeah, so you got robbed like a tourist. Good work out of you,
yeah,
Rob.
I don't want to have to read this 84-page book to try and figure
so that
out.
You can not know how to predict the future. So you can know how to pretend.
Well, and the first
the
thing it says here, rune casting is not about predicting the future. So that's the end of that.
I guess you might as well stop then.
Yeah.
I want to give a special shout out to our listeners, by the way. Wait, Rob's going to read
I was just going to say, as mentioned earlier, rune casting does not predict the future. Oh, well, never mind. I'm done with this.
So anyways, special shout out to some listeners here. We got some new listeners who've been talking to us. Sheldon, you sent us a message and you said, hey, guys, it would be awesome if you would unleash the back catalog, much like the Kraken. You've got a lot of episodes that are not on iTunes. And I said, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So something funny happened when I did that. Over the course of 2 days, we got thousands of downloads. We spiked for like, it was like a random weekday too. That was what was so funny about it. It was two random weekdays. We got so many downloads and I was like trying to rack my brain to figure out why. And I realized it's because everyone's podcatchers, and iTunes and stuff was updating all the episodes they hadn't listened to.
Yeah.
So new listeners, sorry we bombed your devices lots of episodes. But I hope you like them. I hope you like the episodes and I hope you catch up on them and I hope that's fun. Rob is playing with the runes. You know what really gets my goat?
What gets your goat?
This is what gets my goat.
What gets your rune?
I know someone, and when she says the word ruin, she says rune. And I may have mentioned this on the show before, but it fills me with so much rage that I can't hear anything else she says. It's going to just ruin the day. Ruin it. It's just going to ruin it. And I just want to be like, is it going to draw symbols on it? Because that's all I can think of.
Apparently it ruins your day.
It does. It draws symbols all over my day.
Yeah.
Symbols that look like a fist being shaked at people. Shake, shooken, shook, 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 right? Shook, shaken, not stirred, shooken, not stirred.
All right, I'm done with this conversation.
All right, so hey, let's move on to our feature of the week.
We're talking about Star Wars, right? That was our feature for this week.
For 20 seconds, I went, Rob said, can we talk about Star Wars? And I said, I would, but I don't think we should. And Rob said, wait, have you ever played a Star Wars game? And I said, no. And then Rob said, me neither. So we wanted to talk about Star Wars, but we're not going to. So don't get your hopes up, Star Wars fans.
Sorry. But hey, that new trailer's out there.
That new trailer is pretty good.
And I just got another kiss from Quimby.
Quimby, go lay down. Go lay down. Yeah.
The trailer's pretty good.
Trailer's really good.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I gotta say. I mean, I've been burned out on Star Wars for a long time, but that trailer looked pretty good.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. So anyways, we were going to talk about Star Wars, but we're not actually going to, because that would be irresponsible, because you want to hear about games. So we said, how could we talk about Star Wars and talk about games? And then Rob said, well, the closest I ever came to playing a Star Wars game was reading the rule book to the RPG. And I said, I played the RPG. And then I was like, the RPG really sucked when I played it. And we agreed it might just have been because the GM was really terrible.
Yeah.
Basically, it boils down to I was in a lightsaber fight at first level, and it was easier to just punch and kick each other than try and use our sweet laser sword,
mm-hmm.
Which is stupid.
Which is pretty dumb.
Yeah.
It's pretty dumb.
Because that was a level one Jedi.
Right. Because basically, I mean, Jedi or not, anybody could pick one of those things up and cut things with it. And we know that because Han did that in The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Didn't require any special force powers in order to pick that thing up and cut something with it.
Also, General Grievous used the crud out of lightsabers.
Also true.
Yeah.
He also was a, true.
Like half robot though. Cyborg.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what kind of force powers he has, but we know for sure may or not have had, you know, but we know for sure that Han is not force sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a well-established fact.
In the Star Wars board game, he has 1 point of force power.
Because everybody has at least 1 point, right?
No.
Oh no?
Yeah. Isn't that stupid?
That is dumb.
Yeah.
The Star Wars board game?
The Star Wars miniatures game.
Miniatures game.
Sorry.
Okay.
It's the Star Wars board game.
The board game.
Yeah.
There probably was one of those at some point.
I bet it was like there were 42 of them though, and they were all called something different.
Yeah.
Star Wars, the one scene at Mos Eisley.
Star Wars, the Mos Eisley Cantina, the board game.
So we talked about this a long, long time ago, but
yeah.
We wanted to talk a little bit about role-playing games, and how using some design ideas from role-playing games in your normal like board game and card game designs. And you've certainly seen that with some games, the RPG-lite games. I mean, social games are basically RPG-lite games, right? I mean, that's kind of the point. Yeah, so but I was wondering about a little of the like the more solid mechanics and how you could turn those into something that would align with a board or card game.
Sure.
So, Rob, take it away.
So, this is something that a lot of video games do pretty well, you know, where there are big, complex, detailed RPGs and computer and PC games and console games, but there are also a lot of other games that use some RPG elements, and typically that takes the form of branching paths, you know, in the story or actions, but more commonly in character stats and character progression,
right?
And the more a character takes an action, the better they get. And I mean, you see that stuff in Call of Duty, you know, just playing online multiplayer stuff and single player campaign things. That you know, as you go further on the story and you do certain things and you get points. Right now, I'm actually playing Dishonored, which is a freaking great game. I'm really digging that a lot, and it's a story driven first person half shooter half stealth game, but it's great. But there's a lot of RPG elements in terms of character progression with that, and so those are things that work very well for video games. And I was thinking, you know, well, what are some other common tropes of tabletop role playing games that we could kind of translate into board games? So on the subject of character progression, you know, that's kind of an easy and you know, on a fundamental level, pretty common thing where you're upgrading, if a player is inhabiting the role of a specific character,
right.
You might have some kind of a character sheet or a player board or something where you can put points into improving your character. And in a lot of cases, that's similar to an engine building concept.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and there are certain games that actually have level up mechanics. Munchkin, you know, so that it's an amazing game.
Yeah, it's the best.
Munchkin,
I love Munchkin.
I love it too. It's so good. So, ask me what I'd rather play: Formula D or Munchkin.
I'm not going to ask you that question.
It's Munchkin. I can honestly say that. There's another game I'm thinking of that you know that I'd rather play Munchkin than. But I'm not going to say it because I've never espoused how much I hate this game. So it's a popular game.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know what you're thinking.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
Dude, we played it at Gen Con, and all I talked about was how much I hated it because it's such a stupid game. I'm not going to answer the name of the game.
But you kind of didn't like...
That was not a fan of, but that's not the game that I necessarily hate so much. So I don't like the game... So I understand why other people like it, but I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's trite and not good, but it won a bunch of awards. It's like some people's game of the year, you know, for people who don't like games.
This whole episode's a mess, isn't it?
I don't understand. We had a topic, we were prepared, and then everything just hit the fan.
I don't know.
I feel like maybe you shouldn't leave me in there, me bashing at.
No, I shouldn't.
Please don't.
Yeah.
You know what would be funny, though? You know what would be funny? If you just bleeped it out.
Yeah.
Just bleep out the name. That would be great. Yeah. So yeah, do that.
Okay.
Because we can't cut stuff out of this episode. We're going to run out of episode to cut.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the leveling up is something, you know, I mean, Munchkin has that. Nah, Munchkin, blah, blah, blah. But it is a mechanic that it uses, and it doesn't do much with it. It gives you just a little, like, rolling bonus, I think, like, as you go up levels, and the whole point is, like, you're trying to get to level 20.
Yeah.
But that's an easy mechanic to work into a lot of games, especially if you want to have progression on there. Kind of an idea that I think could be fun for that would be a, like, a fantasy-style worker placement game where the board is like randomized and you lay the board out and it's got a bunch of different areas. All face up. You don't have to explore it. It's just like, here's the map of ye old world. Mm-hmm. And in there, you've got areas where there is like the dragon. It's like a level 20 dragon. And the, you know, other areas where there's some gnomes or something you could take out, or some goblins. I don't know. I don't know why you're hating on gnomes, but goblins, nobody likes them. So, so when you look at the board, right, your goal is to level up certain stats to be able to take on certain areas, right? So, like, oh, the dragons, you have to attack them with magic, say, or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying that's the case, but maybe it is. So the whole point is that you're trying to level up certain stats to get to certain areas to unlock things and get points for the end game. That might be a fun way to use that in a game, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, that could work. What are some other features of a tabletop RPG, apart from character progression, that we could maybe translate?
Apart from the actual role-playing, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, I mean, they and these are some things that are shared with board games. They use things like hit points, hit mechanics. I mean, those are all things that mm-hmm. are shared with board games and a lot of different board games with
yeah.
roll to hit, roll to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but other things, you know... A good example would be a continuing storyline. And games like Risk Legacy have addressed that, or any That's legacy true. Game really.
Yep, that is customized to your play.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is a huge mm-hmm. Commonality with RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, some people like to do the one shot RPGs, but I mean, if you're going to do some sort of campaign, as they say,
mm-hmm.
Then that would be a pretty good mm-hmm. A pretty good match for that, I think.
Yep.
So what other You know, I think of things like saving throws, and I mean, all of those kind of mechanical crunch things could be easily quantified and translated to be a board game mechanic, mm-hmm. and some of them already are. Can you think of any other?
Well, I think one of the most foundational things is the game master.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's make or break for an RPG, in my opinion, that if you have a good GM, no matter how awkward or cruddy the role-playing system, the rule set might be, if you have a good GM, the game can still be a blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And in even the best rule set out there can still be a trial to get through if your GM is bad.
Absolutely.
And that I think is an experience we've also had when we've played Werewolf. Because we've played
yes.
Werewolf with a moderator who is dynamite and keeps everything on track. And Werewolf, that night that we played Werewolf at Gen Con with that guy who was on the ball, still some of the most fun large group gaming I've ever experienced.
Yep. And then the second time we did it mm-hmm. with the dude who was just eating nachos.
And not paying attention to the group at all.
Terrible.
It was terrible. And it made Werewolf one of the most unbearable experiences of my entire gaming life.
I kind of want to this year at Gen Con get some generic tickets and then go drink.
And then go play Werewolf?
And go play Werewolf.
Well,
because if it's bad, I won't have a filter enough to not be just a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
Drunk Werewolf? Maybe we can get some audio gear. We can each get some wireless lavs, you know, and set, you know, just set a recording gear somewhere, and we can just record us being jerks in the group.
Trolling for werewolves. We could also just do that with our portable recorder and yeah. just hold it. And we're like, what is this? Be like, it's a...
That'd be a lot more obvious, though.
What is the thing called in Ghostbusters?
A PKE meter.
It's a PKE meter.
Yeah. Sound that. It looks a little bit like a PKE.
It does, doesn't it? Really. We'll get some glowing lights on it, and then it's basically the exact same thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
And that when we played that, that was Yumi and our friend Will, and you and I realized pretty quick what a slog it was and how miserable we were, and so we did everything we could to get murdered.
Yeah.
And Will didn't get the hint.
He was like one of the last people that died.
And so we just had to sit there and wait for him, because he was loving it. He just didn't even occur to him that this sucked.
Because the way to get knocked out of a werewolf game...
is to be a jerk and make a bunch of accusations.
Yeah, to start making accusations about people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you and I were trying to see who could get out first.
Because it was clear after, like, the first night that this was going to suck hard.
Like, I was like, I'm eating these nachos. Yeah. Whatever, it's daytime, it's nighttime. It was pretty terrible.
So, anyway,
let's get off track again. Okay, yeah. Sounds great.
So the Game Master, and that is something that I like about Mansions of Madness, is it's not a Game Master, but it's a Keeper, and it's because he's not technically a Game Master, because he also has rules that he has to follow in the game.
Right.
But it sets one player apart as the antagonist, as somebody who's controlling all the adversaries for the rest of the players. And it's... I've always kind of liked that idea, but I've shied away from that, from wanting to set one person as the bad guy or as the game master in a more traditional tabletop setting, because it's tough to balance, right?
Right. Well, so something that's interesting about Mansions of Madness, correct me if I'm wrong, I think has this too, but with role-playing games and a game master... First of all, there are no rules for the game master. I mean, there are, but it's the game master. They can do whatever they want.
And right? that's a key piece of, yeah.
So, but the only reason that works is because the game master is not trying to kill you. Because if the game master can do whatever they want, they're trying to kill you, they will kill you every time. And there's nothing you can do to stop it, because guess what? They're the game master.
Yeah.
So,
and there are some game masters out there whose goal is to murder the party.
Yeah.
You know.
TPK.
Right, but the game master, it's up to the game master to facilitate a good story.
Facilitate fun, right,
yeah.
So in Mansions of Madness, that's the idea, too, is that...
Well, no.
Or are they trying to win?
They're trying to win.
Okay.
Now, I think that is one of the flaws of Mansions of Madness, is that it says to the game master, your job is to win. And they gives them a whole bunch of rules to do that. But it doesn't say, your job is to make sure everyone has fun.
Right. So you can just be terrible about it.
Right. So I've played that game, I think, 3 or 4 times now, with 2 different people being the keeper. And we had fun, but in every case, it was just a slaughter.
Right.
So I think somebody being the keeper in that game, who also has experience as a game master in regular RPGs,
right.
I think that's a better way to go.
And who says in the beginning, I'm probably not going to win, and that's okay?
Says that to themselves.
Yeah. We're just going to have fun, you know? And if they do win because you guys just can't make it, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as they're not just like, let's slaughter them. But so that's what I was going to point out as the flaw with trying to use that mechanic in board games, is when somebody sits down to play a board game, other than, say, a storytelling game or a party game even, mm-hmm. the goal is to win, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing in the game. You want to win. So that being the case... when you say to someone you're going to be the antagonist, their goal is to win, and I think that's something that really sets board games apart from RPGs. Is RPGs are a cooperative experience.
Sure,
I mean, not always. I mean, there are certainly RPGs where you play as antagonists with one another, right? But most of the time, it's a cooperative experience. You know, in the end, most GMs want you to win. They want you to succeed. They want you to get through the story, because they get excited about telling you a story and making, you know, when I'm a GM, I get excited about telling a fun story, but also trying to make you think outside of the box as a player. Like, that's fun for me. Like, I want you to have to use strategy. Just like when I play, I want to use lots of strategy. That's my concern with using that mechanic in a board game. Is that even if you tell the person, you're here to make this game fun for everyone, they're thinking, but how can I win? What can I do to win? You know? So, I can't think of any games off the top of my head that do that, but I know that I've played games that do that, where one person mm-hmm. is the person trying to win. And you always have to say, you know, one person is the antagonist and everybody else are the good guys. To win, the antagonist must do X, you know? It'd be kind of cool if it was like, the antagonist's job is to make sure everybody has fun. And then mm-hmm. everyone has to buy the antagonist a beer if that happens.
Yeah. I wonder if there's... Because traditionally, the in an RPG, the the party are the good guys fighting off the bad guys, and the GM is controlling all the bad guys. Is there some way to turn that around and make the GM controlling one guy and make all the players controlling an army? Because if you think about it in terms of scale, that's a much more realistic point of view. You know?
Yeah. You could have like a Lord of the Rings style scenario where he's Sauron without the armies. He's just Sauron.
Yeah.
You know?
Or
like a Godzilla type, kaiju type story.
Well, but I think that's still like one adversary.
That's what you just said.
Well, no, I was thinking where if you think about your standard sort of RPG setting, you have you have a group of 3 to 5 strong heroic adventurers, each of whom is controlled by one player.
Yeah.
You know, 1-to-1, and you have one GM who is controlling, over the course of a story, or maybe even in one scene, dozens,
right,
if not hundreds of opponents. So what if the guy who's running the story is controlling the one hero, and each of the other players is controlling 25 bad guys, 25 minions,
I see.
And if you think about the scale of that, it makes sense that from the point of view of the evil army attacking, you know, they've got to have a bunch of different commanders that are trying to work together to coordinate this battle. So it makes sense that you have a group of 3 to 5 people controlling their own sections of a big army, trying to coordinate together to take on the smaller but really strong foe.
Right.
So I wonder if there's something in that, where people are trying to work together. Players are trying to work together as an army, each of whom is controlling a few squads or something,
right,
to conquer one opponent that is stronger than them, but then thematically they're the bad guys and that one guy is the good guy.
I have to imagine that there's a group that's
isn't Ogre kind of that?
I don't know. I was really confused when I found out Ogre was about tanks. So
that's like one big bad thing versus a whole lot of little things.
Could be,
you know. I've never played it. I've only read little blurbs about it, so I could be way off.
That's what I'm saying.
Off.
Like, if it was like we each have an army, and the bad guy's a giant kaiju monster, right?
Yeah.
And we're using our squadron to try and take him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while he's swatting us like flies.
Yeah. Enjoying that beer there?
I am. It's almost gone.
You're sucking it down.
I'm thinking about having another.
Yeah.
Second show might be real interesting you heard last week.
You don't have to drive anywhere. You're already home.
It's true. But I do have to talk to someone important. I don't want to look like a jerk.
Yeah. You should get up on that mic, though, when you talk.
I'm sorry. I'm right up on this mic when I talk.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, RPGs. I think we can learn some things from RPGs, but I do think there are some strict differences that make them, other than just the role playing, because obviously the role playing is different.
Inhabiting a character,
right?
Which you can still do
just ask me. Like, half the games I design, you have a character.
Yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's enough of that. It's just, I think it's always valuable to talk about this sort of stuff and identify and understand differences and kind of common tropes. To make sure that we're keeping them in perspective and what are you giggling at?
You finish what you're saying and then I'll explain it.
Well, I guess I'm done. Just, you know, to just keep reminding ourselves of differences and different mechanics and different ways to look at things and keep that creative energy happening.
Right.
So go on.
So I was thinking about, it'd be cool if there was a game where like I was, on my turn, I'm the good guy, but on your turn, I'm the bad guy, and we keep swapping back and forth, right? And I don't know how that would work, but that sounds kind of interesting to me. And then I was like, have I ever played a game like that before? And I said, I don't think so. But then I thought of Dead End, Chevy Dodd's game that Neil also worked on.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's how that worked, but for some reason, I thought of that. And then, and then I thought of Cape Guy.
Cape Guy.
Remember Cape Guy?
Oh, good old Cape Guy.
And I don't remember who coined this phrase, but like somebody who played the game with him said, the only way I can think to describe his style of play was aggressive losing.
Yeah.
I don't remember who said that.
Cape Guy. We have to explain Cape Guy now in case somebody...
aggressive losing.
Builders haven't heard Cape Guy. That was 2 years ago at Gen Con?
It was 2 years ago. It might have been...
2013?
It might have been Mikey Jones that... they described that, or it might have been Chevy, or it might have been Neil. I don't know, but
we were playing. We were playtesting some of our games. I think at that point for me, I was playing Frankenstein's Legacy just with some random people there at Gen Con, and Cape Guy. Cape Guy was a gentleman. I'm sure he was a very nice person, and he was wearing a top hat and he was wearing a cape.
Yeah.
Cape
Guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was cosplaying as something, and he was hanging out around that area because he wanted to play a Settlers game. It was like a large scale.
He wanted to play the giant Settlers game with giant, the big dice where you roll it and throw stuff on the floor.
But no one was playing, and so he's like, well, okay, I guess I can sit down and play your game while I'm waiting for more people to show up. So he sat down and played Frankenstein's Legacy, and you're right. And he basically, if I were to say, here's how you play the game, you roll this die and then you move this guy three spaces forward. He would roll this die and then move this guy three spaces backward.
Well, but he wasn't breaking the rules, though. No, you were basically saying, like, to win this game, you need more gold. Try and get as much gold as possible.
There you go. Yeah.
And then he was like, great idea. And then every time he had a chance to get gold, he would get rid of gold instead of getting gold.
That's
he was following the rules, but like...
Yeah. And I would say, you should really not do that right now. He would say, no, I have my own strategy. I'm going to try it this way.
Was aggressive losing.
Aggressive losing, yeah. So, go Cape Guy.
It wasn't just that. He then played Dead End into the exact same thing. Like,
yeah.
It's like, dude, it's time to get out of the house. There's like 40 zombies in here. And he's like, I have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Cape Guy.
But mm-hmm. we talked about, and this is just a thing for the people who haven't heard this original story, there were lessons learned from him because he played the game in a way that we never thought anyone would play a game.
True.
And it made you think about your game differently because you were like, what is he doing? Like, mm-hmm. what is he doing? And that was actually not completely unhelpful. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And you can't control for every person who plays your game like a crazy person.
Right.
But you can at least try and keep that in mind. Sometimes people will try and do stupid things.
It's true.
I mean, there's just no nice way to put that.
So, speaking of stupid things, I heard you're going to pitch a game.
Oh, is it that? Are we that? Yeah. Is it that time?
I think it's that time.
Okay. That's fine. I can do that.
I think it's that time.
Yeah, so I'm going to pitch a game. So, our buddy Danny Devine, he tweeted something a few weeks ago. A picture of some character designs that he had done, and he tweeted and basically said, "I have no idea why I did these or what they were for." And I replied and I said, "Oh man, I totally want to make a game for those." And he said, "Well, if you can design a game, you can have the art." And Danny, I'm not going to hold you to that because I'm sure you said that in haste on Twitter and no obligation, but it did inspire me. And they were kind of cute little designs for six different monsters, like classic monsters. So there was a vampire, and there was a werewolf, and there was a zombie. The other ones were, one was kind of like a Jason Voorhees-looking guy in a hockey mask that he called the Psycho. There was also a ghost, and the other one was an alien. And I said, well, you know, now I've got to make up a game to use these monsters. So I went back to some of my favorite concepts, and you know that I like two-player games, and I like games that play fairly quickly for two-player games. So that was kind of the route that I decided to go down on. So this is a game where a two-player game, and in this game you have six monsters that you can choose from, and each player is going to pick one monster, and they're going to fight with each other, and you're going to have a battle to the death with these monsters, okay? Each monster has its own separate deck of cards, 36 cards. There are 12 cards in that deck that are the same across every monster, and 24 cards that are unique for each monster, okay? And I say unique. I mean, it's not 24 unique cards, but, you know, there might be three of this one and four of that one and two of this one and so on.
Unique cards nonetheless.
Yeah, unique for that monster. Okay. And on your turn, you're going to play cards to attack the other monster. But the thing is, in order to play cards, you have to spend resource cubes in order to do that. And to get resource cubes, you have to draw them out of a bag. Because thinking back to Epic Monster Tea Party, and it's very, it's, you know...
I'm just laughing, so I'm thinking, you're like, well, I published this game that's got cubes in it and pulling out of bags, so time to design another game with cubes.
Well, but it's that's one of the, my favorite things about the game.
It's a fun mechanic.
It's a fun, simple, tactile thing, right? Yeah. And you can stick your hand in the bag and you're like, well, no, I don't like that one. I'm going to try this one, you know? Right. And you're feeling with your fingers. And of course, you don't know what you're getting.
If you have like a superpower to feel colors, you'd be really good at your
games. You'd be super good at that. Yeah. But, So each monster has their own balancing in here, but I'm going to give you kind of the standard setup. So at the start of the game, each monster has a set of, say, 8 cubes in some combination of 4 colors. Okay. These 4 colors are different energy types. I'm calling them means, the 4 means and the means to an end, or means as in the faces of evil, or whatever you want to define.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the thematic name for them. And these 4 types are blood, darkness, plasma, and electricity. And every monster in the game has one kind of prime mean that all of his powers are based on, and then some other distribution of powers beyond that, or of means beyond that. Okay. So every monster starts with a set of 8 that goes in the bag, and it might be an even split 2-2-2-2, or it might be 3 of one and 1 of another one. It's so some mix like that. You throw those into the bag and you mix them all up. And there's only one bag, so you're sharing this bag. And the player who goes first, the first phase of the game, they can look at their hand of cards. And you always start your round with 5 cards in your hand. Okay. And every card in your hand has some kind of power, or you can discard it in order to add more cubes of a specific type into the bag.
Okay.
Okay.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So at the start of your turn, you can discard as many cards as you want from your hand to add those specific cubes to the bag. After you've done that, then you can draw whatever cubes out of the bag that you're allowed per your monster. And again, I think the standard is going to be 4. You can draw 4 cubes out, and then you can have a maximum of 4 of any one type on your character card. Again, to tweak based on certain monsters. Okay, standard, you can have 4 electricity, 4 blood, 4 darkness, 4 plasma.
Right.
Okay. So after you've collected your means from the bag, then now you can play cards. And you can play a card. This might be a card you can put down for free, like a weapon or a piece of armor that you can put down. Or if it's a piece of armor, you're probably going to have to spend a point of something to put the armor on. But if it's a weapon, you can put it down, and every time you want to use it to attack somebody, you have to spend a point for that.
That makes sense.
You know? And then there are special attacks that you play for different ways, and they do different types of damage. There's no rolling for damage. Everything's auto-hit that might be offset if they have any armor or resistance.
You could actually do that with armor, not to interrupt, but instead of having a cost to play armor, you could have the armor be spend X of X to reduce X of X. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So if the weapons did different types of damage, like blood damage or, you know.
Yeah, right now I'm not doing specific damage type.
It was just a thought for another way to make armor be free if you wanted to put it down for nothing.
That's true. Yeah. So that's a good thought. And you're going to, I'm thinking, say everybody has starts with 20 hit points or something. That's my thought right now. So you play whatever cards you can from your hand, whatever cards you have left. And then when you're out of cards, when you're out of actions to do, then your turn ends, you draw back up to 5 cards, then you hand the draw bag to your opponent. And then now, of course, any cubes that are left in the bag that you did not draw out, they're now fair game for your opponent to take. And so he or she can then discard more cards to add more cubes to the bag, or they can just draw based on what is out there. So kind of the point is that as the play goes on, the two of you are influencing the mix of what's available in the bag.
Right. I like that.
Yeah. And you have some control over that, but there's still a little bit of fear that you might get something you don't want out of there.
So when you spend something, I just want to make sure you put that back in the bag then?
Well, no. After you spend something, it goes to a discard pile, and you can only put a discard cube pile. You know, set off to the side. And so when you're discarding cards, you can take stuff out of that discard pile and put it in the bag at that time.
I got you.
It doesn't go immediately back into the bag.
Cool. Okay. That makes sense. Sorry, I missed that part.
Pretty much always going to be a supply of extra somewhere.
Right.
Because if you use up all the surplus supply, then you're not drawing stuff out of the bag.
Right.
Cape Kai would do that.
Yeah.
Cape Kai
would be like, my goal is to stock the bag and never take anything out.
Right. Yeah.
And then he'd be like, at the end of the game, the more points in the bag you win, right?
Right.
Yeah, Cape Kai, that's how. Yeah, that's it.
Good enough. Yeah. That's basically the concept there. The balancing and all the tweaking of that is going to be a challenge. At this point right now, I've actually already, I've got cards written up for the vampire and for the werewolf. They're going to be my two standards for me to try and explore the idea with. But I, then, of course, I'm thinking about each monster. Good shake there, Quimby. each monster kind of has its own theme or its own structure to it. So,
right.
So like the vampire is a blood-based creature.
Right, of course.
His powers are based on biting and draining resources. Mm-hmm. So he has cards where he can play a standard bite attack, and if he can play a drain card after that, then after a successful bite where he does damage, he can then take resource cubes from you, or means right. from you.
So is the... You said there's a Frankenstein style monster?
There's not a Frankenstein.
Oh, there's not. So what's the werewolf?
The werewolf is a darkness power.
Okay.
So all his stuff is just based on pure physical attacks, clawing and biting and
alien
slashing.
Alien electricity?
The alien is a plasma character.
Who's electricity then?
The Phantom's electricity.
Okay.
But let me keep going through the list here.
Sorry.
Because I have it all written down in order.
Sorry.
So the werewolf, so physical attacks, I'm not sure. I was thinking he does have an option to do ongoing damage, so he can bite once and cause like you to bleed or you know
okay.
kind of thing. So yeah. ongoing damage. Let's see. There's the psycho. So he's the Jason guy. But what I'm thinking is he's the only character that I have right now that it does not have one core mean that it's focused on.
Okay.
And he has four different masks that he can put on. So he can only wear one mask at a time, but then when he's wearing his psycho mask, you know, his hockey mask, that's when he's a blood character.
Nice.
You know?
That's cool.
And so he gets bonuses for any stuff.
So he's
any
like
stuff
the advanced character.
yeah. So, yeah, right. The alien is plasma. So he has a lot of powers based on stopping attacks and resisting damage. And he can convert a lot of power types into plasma because he takes all this right. other stuff and uses his special technology to turn it into plasma, which he can use to attack you back.
Right.
The zombie is a blood-based character. He has a very high number of hit points because zombies are hard to stop.
Yep.
And he's very resistant to draining stuff. But a lot of his cards are defense-based, and he's a little hard to attack. So he's actually maybe a good one for a newbie because he can soak up a lot of damage. But I mean, it's maybe tough to deal it out. The Phantom is electricity based because ghosts and their EMF and stuff.
Yeah, you know.
He has low hit points, but he has the ability to kind of possess the other players and control them, make them do things they don't want to do.
Okay.
So he can like take their cards and use them for things. So those are the basic concepts with that. Oh, did I say the werewolf is darkness based?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You said he was physical attacks and sometimes can make people bleed.
Yeah.
So that's okay. Cool.
So that's kind of the concept with that. I was thinking about also maybe doing, we've talked a little bit about the kind of the glass cannon idea.
Right.
I thought it might be cool to make one character that, you know, has kind of really low hit points, can deal out a ton of damage. It's all frontal assault with virtually no defense. But once you run out of cards in this deck, he's dead.
So you got to kill quick.
Right. Yeah. So that's, you know, something to toy with much more advanced concept there.
Right.
But I'm very close to a prototype on that. Honestly, the cards are all written. I just need to make up the cards and print them out and cut them. Right. And then I'm ready to try it.
Cool.
But I think it's kind of a fun idea.
That's cool.
I'm just calling it Monster Battles right now because I'm bad at names.
That's a pretty bad name.
Especially because
I think Monster Battle / Monster Fight has been the name of 12 prototypes you've never made.
At least, yeah.
I'm glad to see that this is finally making it to the table.
Yeah, right, finally.
That's good, man. I would love to try that game. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, hopefully sometime soon I'll have that. I just need to find an hour to sit down and type up the cards and then print them out. So,
right.
But I've got them all in a spreadsheet. So that's ready to go.
Spreadsheet's good. On Google Docs.
Yeah. Actually, this one's in Excel on my home computer.
Whoa.
Because Google Sheets doesn't give you as many formatting options as I like.
It does enough for this.
It does enough, but it's not, it just, you know, it doesn't let me like freeze paints, you know?
I
really like freeze paints.
I use freeze paints sometimes.
All the time. Anyway.
Anyways. Well, that's cool. I would play that. I think you should try that.
Yeah.
Builders, tell him it's good and then he should do it.
I'm definitely going to.
I have a couple of comments here from the website
I'd
like to read.
Good.
That's okay.
Yeah, please.
The first is from Barb. Barb is a new listener and she says, great news about your games, Rob. I really want to go to Unpub next year. What are the dates and what do I need to do to get a table reserved? Well, I don't know the answers to those things, but guess who does? Daryl at Unpub. So if you go to unpub.net, it should have all that stuff listed now for Unpub 6, it'll be.
Yeah. Are they going to do a Kickstarter again?
No.
Because
they didn't like the randomness of people getting tables. I think they have some better ideas maybe, but I could be wrong. But anyways, I could be speaking out of turn. I don't know. So, but I think in September is when tickets are going to start to become available. And you and I are making that a definite plan for next year.
Absolutely.
Must because attend. It was very, very good for you this year. I had a good time. You had an amazing turnout from it. So, yeah. Next, we have a comment from Ben Merck. Ben says, "Hey guys, so I'm glad I'm new to the super depths of the board game hobby, but I'm really glad to be getting involved with it. That led me to looking for board game podcasts, and yours seemed to be the one that was most interesting." Well, thank you.
Yeah, awesome.
"I listened to the 150th episode and decided that I might have been listening to a beer podcast, LOL, but continued listening and enjoyed what I heard. I have started listening now from the beginning, and I'm up to episode 12 with the bonus episodes that have played up until that time.
It's just commitment.
A thought. Thank you. Yeah, just a thought. You should know that I'm enjoying the show and grateful of all your hard work you have put in over the past several years." Well, thank you, man. It always is nice to hear stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, we do this, you know, not just for us, but also for you guys. In the beginning, we really did this for us. I'm not going to lie. It was all about us and how fun it was. And, yeah. So, yeah. So, another comment we have, and I'm going to read this. This is actually, I can't read the whole email because I think I can say this. So it's someone's entry into the contest.
Oh,
well, okay. It's Nate Doherty's entry into the contest. And I'm going to say that it's Nate Doherty because that's who the email's from. Uh-huh. But I'm not going to read his contest entry.
Okay, because we're going to save that.
I'll read it to you off the air, though.
Okay.
And it's fun. Hey, guys. First off, congrats, Rob. I have a feeling that it wouldn't take long to get Sulun Tycoon signed. The visual appeal of the game alone catches people's attention and the gameplay backs it up.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Yeah.
To answer Jason's earlier question, I do plan on coming to GrandCon again. Yes, sir.
Excellent.
Hopefully, I will be bringing some friends, like Kelly, who is listening to this right now. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
I would like to get a game into the Unpub section they had there last year so I can try some playtesting out with strangers before I hit the big Unpub next year. So even better news, Nate's coming to Unpub.
Yeah, and we will, I think we said before, we're going to not get a table this year.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're going to just hang out at GrandCon and play games.
Yes.
That's the one thing. We did not do a lot of that we regret. And I'll probably stay on site again. I don't know if you will or not, but I will.
I don't know.
So
depends on budget stuff at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
So the real question is whether you guys are going to record a live show there and whether you'll allow Len and I to take that show over. That's funny. Well, if we do host a live show, you guys can definitely be on the live show and talk
with
us.
Totally.
So speaking of which, Len, I hope you're coming again. I'm guessing you are because you had such a good time last year. Yeah. As long as you're... your time off because you're I think he's in the military, so hopefully time off allows for him to be there.
Yeah, we haven't talked at all about events, and since we're not going to be sitting behind the table, we haven't talked at all really about what we're going to do while we're at GrandCon.
Right.
So
I would say we're more likely probably to host an event this year because we're not going to be stuck behind a table all day. And we like doing the live events, you know.
We do, yeah. So we'll have to talk to Mark and Brian about that and see what we can work out.
Yeah. Jason, your trick-taking game was, in fact, a trick-taking game. Thank you, Nate. From what I could tell, I had a similar idea about a card game about superheroes where you can beef them up over the course of the game by adding new cards. But I didn't know exactly how I wanted the players to get new cards. I really like the strategy of trick-taking as a way to get those new powers. Enjoy a bells for me. Cheers, Nate. So, yeah.
Bad. Cool. Two things from Twitter here. This is from Senior Bob. How about after a design is sold, what determines if the designer helps get the final product ready? And then Hanbo follows up with that. And once signed, do you walk away from the design or remain engaged for design or FAQ issues? Well, those are excellent questions. And you know, I don't think there's any real good way to answer that.
Other than to say they vary greatly from publisher to publisher.
Absolutely.
I would say probably the smaller publishers, you are more likely to be involved.
Yes.
I can tell you from Van Ryder Games that that I'm very involved in the process.
As am I. Yep.
And I like that. I'll be honest. I didn't expect that. Like, I didn't think I was going to be as involved as I am, but I'm thankful that I am, because I like being involved, and it's my game. It's my baby. I mean, it's my first game that someone else is publishing, and Water Balloon Washout, I obviously had total control over, but it's cool to have a sounding board to be able to bounce it off from, and what's also cool is, you know, there were times with Washout where I had to say, gosh, I don't know what to do with this, and I'd have to ask you, I'd ask my wife, I'd ask other people who tried it and get an opinion. This is great, because I can say, I think we should do this, and AJ can say, no, let's do this, and I'm like, awesome, let's do it that way, so then I don't have to decide.
Right.
So that's actually really nice.
Yeah.
Or experiences like you had with Playco, right?
Yeah, yeah, and so far, my working with AJ has been been very collaborative like that, and I agree with that 100%. And of course, with Playco, they just kind of took the game and they're running with it. And I'm so far I haven't heard anything. As far as I know, they're just making the game as it stands, and which of course makes me happy because means they like what I put together.
Right.
But they haven't really asked for a whole lot. Of course, I don't know where they are in the production process right now either.
Right.
So it's still so new, and hopefully I'll have more about that to share in the future.
Right. And I think some publishers are more flexible on that than others.
Yeah.
I think there are some publishers where sometimes they'll let you be hyper involved, and other times they will tell you mm-hmm. they're okay, they got it, you know, mm-hmm. and obviously the more finished a game is, the better, mm-hmm. For you not having to be hands on. Like, I would say that even if AJ, say, had published, Epic Monster Tea Party instead of, that mm-hmm. you would have been less involved only because there was a lot less work to do. You
sure.
know what I mean? So,
but they also, you know, there's a tendency, I think, for a lot of publishers to want to put their own little twist on it to make it their own,
right.
To fit their product line.
And that's their prerogative.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
you know, one thing that we haven't talked about, I think, that this is a new experience to me. I have been always thinking about the day that I get something signed. It's like this big, joyful success, hoorah thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great. It's great. That day you sign that piece of paper and away it goes and you're like, yes, I sold a game. But, you know, then there's, it's not like the next day you have a product in your hand.
Right. You kind of feel like that's going to happen, right?
You feel like it's, yay, it's done. And then I have this thing, but that's not at all what's going to happen.
Right.
Because the publisher still has to make that game. And it's not just they have to send files off to the printer and away it goes. It's
right.
not even just they have to start buying art and then away it goes. It's they have to then... there is a long process
yeah.
after that. Which I knew that intellectually, but I was not prepared for that emotionally.
No.
Yeah. And so I think, since we're on this subject, just that's something that I don't think we've talked about that... Is something that I've learned that's new since signing these two games.
Yep.
That I wanted to make sure to communicate to you guys out there.
Right.
That it's not over when you sign that piece of paper. I mean, legally, I guess it's over, but emotionally, it's not. I mean,
right.
It could be a long time before you see a product in your hands.
Well, and you know, another like something that like with AJ, he's very communicative, but. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we may have talked a little less on the last show. I don't know yet because we haven't recorded it. But, you know, like when I first signed, he was working very hard on Hostage Negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, he had Salvation Road, right?
Right.
So, like, we didn't talk right away. Like, you know, it was kind of like, all right, I bought it. And then, like, I sent him the rules and, like, we talked a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, like, he kind of left me to my own devices for a while because he was busy making a couple other games.
Sure.
It hasn't been that way with you because he's gearing up to do, you know what I mean, to get mm-hmm. all three done. And now that mine has moved more farther along. So it's just, that was interesting. Like, I didn't, so that made it even weirder for me when it was like, now you're hyper involved. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there was that kind of lull and I thought, maybe I'm not going to be involved. And nothing, I mean, I'm not faulting AJ for that. I mean, he was very clear mm-hmm. about,
sure.
listen, I'm going to sign you now, but we got to hold off for a while I get these other two games that I've committed to signed. And,
mm-hmm.
and he made sure I was okay with that coming into it because he's a
sure.
good guy and he does that. You know, because there's nothing worse than a publisher saying like, all right, we're going to get this game out. And then like you don't hear anything.
You yeah.
know, that would be really difficult.
Right.
Especially if it's a game you think is going to go on Kickstarter and that kind of stuff. So yeah, certainly my experience with AJ has not been that. It's been, this is what we're going to do. And he's stuck to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice change of pace from the last book. Sure. I dealt with
it. Yeah. Right. No
he
doubt.
Said, we're going to do this, this, and this, and this. And then we did nothing except yeah. for get my game back. So, wah, wah, wah. So yeah.
So anyway.
All right.
That's probably enough, huh?
Yeah, I think we're
okay,
good.
Okay, real quick, I want to remind everybody about the contest that we've got running right now with our friends at Penny Press. Send us your game-themed newspaper headline, something tonally that would fit in the late 1800s, early 1900s. The crazier and wilder and funnier, the better. Got to be game-themed. Send it in to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. We're going to read through those and we're going to pick our favorite. And the winner, the number one entry, will be receive a free copy of Penny Press, courtesy of Matt and Robert, the wonderful and awesome designers of that. We're excited about that. Get your entries in by the end of May and we'll announce a winner sometime in June. Again, entry is only open, unfortunately, to residents of the United States. Anybody who wants to in the world, of course, can send an entry in, but you can only win if you live in the U.S. for shipping reasons. Sorry about that. And that's the end, huh?
That's the end.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Thanks, Quimby. Jason is at J.A. Slingerland, and I'm at poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG, or just record something on your home computer and email it to us. We like that, too. And you can come on back next week and do more crazy, stupid stuff with us. Say goodnight, Quimby.
Good night. You gonna bark? Speak. Speak! Speak! You remember this dog won't stop barking. Speak.
There we go.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Yes.
Better. Better, 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 better.
Better, better, better.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.